members are currently engaged in other meetings which started early this morning and they're running a bit late. So the committee will start a little bit late. My apologies once again for the inconvenience. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Isaac Bauer. I am the committee secretary for the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. Once again, my apologies for the delay in start. Like explained earlier, we were waiting for members who were delayed at previous meetings. We can start as we go rate. We have enough members. In terms of the NCOP rules, number 92, acting chairperson, if the chairperson of a committee or subcommittee is absent or unable to perform the functions of chairperson, the committee or subcommittee may elect another of its members as acting chairperson unless these rules provide otherwise in a specific case. That was 92.1, 92.2. An acting chairperson performs the functions and may exercise the powers of the chairperson. In terms of the rules, I call for nominations for acting chairperson. Ms. Prince, your hand was up first. I have a nomination for Mr. Hai as acting chairperson. Mr. Singh, your hand was second.
Okay, I second that.
Seconded by Mr. Singh. Are there any further nominations? In the absence of any further nominations, I duly elect Mr. Hai as acting chairperson for the session of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. Thank you, Mr. Hai. Please take your chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Without wasting any time, we welcome the honorable members to our Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources that will be focusing on the briefing by Department of Mineral Resources on the timeline for hydraulic fracturing Commission, including the site earmarked for this initial investigative phase. In terms of the attendance, do we meet the quorum? So we meet the quorum. There are apologies. Are there any? There's only one for Honorable Gayla from the Eastern Cape. He's unable to attend. Honorable Honorable Smith from Limpopo. Before we do the introduction, I want to check with the honorable members that in terms of the select committee meetings, we normally have documents sent to us in terms of the rule 7 days before the meeting. I have not received any documents. I don't know, I've not perused any document yet. At this stage, I don't have any document in front of me for the briefing by the department. I want to first hear from the members how do we then approach, before we even deal with the introductions of the honorable members and the department. Honorable Singh?
Can we first hear from the department why we have not received it? Before we comment,
can we get a response from the head of delegation?
Honorable Chair and honorable member. The documentation was circulated today, but I wanted to find out if you were suggesting that you would like to have had it earlier.
I was indicating that we, as a matter of principle, we receive a document 7 days before the meeting, so that as members we go through, we prepare, so that as you make presentation, we are ready to ask questions.
Okay.
No, you say you're not aware.
Well, I'd like to apologize for that, and we'll ensure that we address that in the future.
Can I hand over to the member, Honorable Nyambi?
Thanks, Chair. Of the view that it would be very problematic for us to engage with the presentation that we're getting now. Not unless you are saying they are going to present, but if we want them to present and ask questions and engage, I don't see us being able to do it justice. Then, under your guidance, you'll guide us, because if I'm checking, it's a very serious presentation, and it's an issue that we are not taking lightly, and we're supposed to be assisted and make sure that we do the necessary preparations and come here not just to listen only, but come here ready so that we can be able to engage with the presentation. But that might not be possible given this reality that we are getting the presentation now. So you'll guide us how we take it forward.
Actually, I need to be guided by the honorable members. I'll allow you to, after I have heard from the honorable members, what is the way forward. Honorable Laruska.
Thank you very much, Chair. I do agree with my honorable colleagues that this is unacceptable to receive a documentation on the day of the presentation, purely because we didn't have the time to prepare. But on the other hand, also, I think we are here, and what I normally would have liked to see is to say we send the department back and we reschedule the meeting. But I think this is very important that we get the information, and my suggestion would be that we continue with the meeting keep into consideration that we are not that prepared as a committee. That's unfair to us as members, and that there should most probably be a follow-up meeting after this, and that in future we make sure that documentation reaches the committees well in advance, 7 days before the time. Thank you.
Honorable Sim.
Thank you, Chair. I'm the same view that we should accept the presentation, but have a chance for questions, well, some of the questions to be asked what are common, and but another meeting to re-interrogate the questions after the presentation.
There's a mover and a seconder for the continuation of the meeting with the issues of consent raised by honorable members. Is there any contrary view that we should continue with the meeting? If not, then we'll continue with the meeting. But let's emphasize to the department that this won't be allowed in future. In another committee, we had to chase another entity out of the select committee room because they also did this. Something similar. It's just that it's not the same committee. Otherwise, if it was the same committee, we would have to be consistent. But fortunately, it's not the same select committee, so we can't be accused of being inconsistent. But if it was in the same committee, we would have been accused of being inconsistent. I'm raising it because the same members that are in this committee also serve in the select committee that chased the NDJ away. But if this happens again in future, we will have no choice but to take the members away. I'm coming from the WIP party. We have raised this concern by department of not submitting the documents on time. The chief WIP has indicated that it's a matter that will be taken up with the deputy president, who is responsible for government business in parliament. Because this thing has been continuing. We've been raising it as a concern, but it still continues unabated. But let's now come to the issue of introducing one another. My name is Manza Isaac Rai. I'm a member of this committee representing the Eastern Cape. The committee is the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. I've just been nominated as the acting chairperson in the absence of the chairperson who has been booked off sick for a number of weeks for now. Next, remember?
My name is Omi Singh. I'm representing the province of KwaZulu-Natal for this committee.
Ellen Prince, I'm a member of this committee and I'm presenting the Western Cape.
Good morning, my name is Bridget Masango. I'm representing the province of Gauteng in this select committee. Thanks.
Good morning, I'm Kathy Labuskafi. I'm representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, Chomonyambi from Mpumalanga province.
Good morning, Chair and all. My name is Annette Lovemore. I'm a member of the National Assembly, but I'm here because my constituency is threatened by fracking.
Sanibona nigama uEmmanuel Musankosi Mlambo, ilunga lekomiti limele iGauteng.
We'll now ask the department to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. We are here from the Department of Mineral Resources. My name is PBD Ramunja. I'm the Director General of the department. I'll ask my colleagues to introduce.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. My name is Musa Mabuza. I am the Deputy Director General responsible for Mineral Policy and Investment Promotion.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Ntanta Jali. I'm the Acting Director of Mineral Policy Development in the department.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Kaya Matose. I'm in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Chair and the Honorable Members. My name is Wazim Tlonga from the Office of the DG.
To introduce everybody else after the department who is amongst in the house.
Morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Leslie Green. I'm a professor of anthropology and head of the Environmental Humanities Program at the University of Cape Town.
Sorry, I'm Jan Lazewski, professor in the Institute of Marine and Environmental Law at the University of Cape Town. Thank you for the opportunity of being here.
Good morning. My name is Marco Schmidt, parliamentary liaison officer from the German Consulate General here in Cape Town. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Kima Fani, and I'm a monitor from PNG. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Dan Gaber from Media 24.
Good morning, everyone. Paul Dekiasa, political correspondent for Business Day newspaper.
Good morning, I'm Richard Davies. I'm a journalist with SARPA.
I'm from Shell, South Africa.
Good morning, Acting Chair and members. My name is Ivan Collier, and I'm from Shell, upstream.
Hi, I'm Jari van Esper, DA researcher.
Good morning, I'm Sakila Mugwena from Parliament Communication.
Thank you very much. We will then allow the department to make a presentation, and thereafter members there will then ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We have put together a presentation, and the outline of the presentation. Okay, there are hard copies which have been circulated. We have to go through the hard copies, Chair, if it's okay with you. Okay.
Do honorable members have copies?
Yeah.
Okay. Unfortunately, this is not working, so we'll rely on our copies, hard copies. Thank you.
Okay. The outline of the presentation is shown on slide 2, where we'll touch on the background, the legislative framework, and then also address the issues of what is shale gas and what is hydraulic fracturing, and we'll also touch on the scope of the regulations and come with concluding remarks. The presentation will be given by the DDG, Musa Mabuza. I will allow him to continue.
Thank you, GT. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll start with a bit of a background on slide 3. In responding to the many calls and concerns that were received by the department, the DMR imposed a moratorium on any processing of new applications for reconnaissance permits, technical cooperation permits, exploration rights, and production rights in for shale gas in February of 2011. And that was so that an interdepartmental team of experts that also brought in academic and other experts outside of government was convened to investigate and submit a report on the potential environmental risks associated with hydraulic fracturing, as well as the negative and positive socio-economic impact of shale gas. This report was subsequently approved by Cabinet, and some of the key recommendations that emerged out of the report included the following. The first was that an interdepartmental committee should be established to augment the current regulatory framework, having recognized that there was a lot of relevant regulatory framework, but it was sitting in various pockets, and it also identified that there were gaps that needed to be augmented. Purely with the focus of mitigating any negative environmental impact associated with hydraulic fracturing. It was also recommended that both the Departments of Mineral Resources as well as Science and Technology explore appropriate mechanisms to ensure that the development of shale gas as well as the astronomy research projects can be pursued without one compromising the other. The Interdepartmental Committee has since developed draft technical regulations for petroleum exploration and exploitation in order to address the following. As it was raised at the beginning, the first part was to augment the gaps that were identified in the current regulatory framework governing both exploration and exploitation of petroleum resources, particularly in respect of hydraulic fracturing. It also, the regulation also prescribed good international petroleum industry practices and standards that will enhance the safe exploration and production of petroleum. We recognize that as a nascent industry, we have had to look into those jurisdictions that have had over 5 decades of making mistakes and correcting those mistakes over the years. And so they have developed the best international practices that we could look into and see the extent to which such practices could be adaptable into a South African environment. The draft regulations were published for public comments and inputs. Substantive inputs were received from quite a number of interested and affected stakeholders. Those were processed. And the department is currently in the process of finalizing the consultations with all interested and affected communities. The next part looks at the existing legislative framework that governs upstream oil and gas activities. These include, of course, the MPRDA, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, number 28 of 2002, the National Water Act, number 36 of 1998, the National Environmental Act, 1998, the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act, number 21 of 2007, the National Environmental Management Waste Act, number 59 of 2008, as well as the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Act, number 53 of 2008. The regulations that we will share with you in a moment, a summary thereof.
Sorry. I'm giving you in total 20 minutes. So you've already used 5 minutes. So I would encourage you to talk to the presentation rather than reading word for word there. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. So the regulations augment the existing legislative framework. And it must be understood that they are not exhaustive on their own. They must be read together with other relevant applications. And then we explain firstly what shale gas is. It is a natural gas that is trapped within the, in our instance, the Karoo Shale Formation. I think what is very important is to recognize the depth at which these shale formations lie. They are on average between 1.5 and 4 kilometers. That sort of depth that we are talking about. And because of the low permeability of the rocks within which shale is found, its production is enhanced by this technology known as hydraulic fracturing. And so in the next slide, number 8, it really is a pity, honorable members, we can't show you on the screen, but it effectively shows you how the hydraulic fracturing works. You will see on your left part above what is written conductor casing, that is the well that is drilled to access the depths that I have just alluded to, and a technology called directional drilling is applied. So what happens is you drill a depth at that 1.5, say 2 kilometers, and then access the formations horizontally. And then we will show as we proceed how this technology functions. Of course, we are aware of the attendant risks of pollutions, particularly of drinking water, that are associated with the fracturing fluids. And or methane and induced seismic events. And so these regulations are designed so that they can particularly address those attendant risks that go with the technology of hydraulic fracturing. One of the key things to focus on is the well construction. So when you are drilling, the management of the well and ensuring that there is appropriate integrity of the well significantly minimizes and eliminates the risks of any potential risks that have been identified. And these, as I indicated earlier, we have drawn from the American Petroleum Institute standards, who have had over 5 decades of practicing the shale gas extraction business They have made all the mistakes, and they have learned from the mistakes that they have learned and used their experience to infuse into the definition and further refining the standards that seek to protect any potential environmental pollution. In terms of the scope of the regulations, the regulations do not apply strictly in respect of hydraulic fracturing, but will apply generally to petroleum exploration and production, although they place a special emphasis on hydraulic fracturing. Honourable members, if we flip over to slide 11, still covering the scope of the regulations, I think their emphasis is on the differentiation between conventional gas and unconventional gas, and the picture in that slide effectively explains the sources of conventional and unconventional gas sources, and shale gas would be classified as unconventional gas. This is the gas that is trapped in the impermeable rocks, as I earlier explained. The next part of the couple of slides will summarize at a very high level the salient provisions that are contained in the regulations. For instance, under Regulation 4, it places the requirement for assessment of geology and geohydrology of the area. So as part of the application, an applicant is required to have a comprehensive knowledge of the geology as well as the geohydrology. Now, once this information is available, of course, geological information and geohydrological information assists in designing proper mitigation for any risks that are attended. So this already places the notion of start with an end in mind, and that if you have the knowledge, you then have the ability to design appropriate wells and the well design and ensure that the well integrity is achieved and all the attendant risks can be sufficiently addressed and attended to. The regulations 12 to 16, regulations 12 to 16, these deal particularly with the casing standard. So once you have drilled, there's a requirement. The requirement for casing. Casing is the for instance, the installation of the steel pipe, the cementing of that particular steel pipe, the quality of cement, the thickness of the steel, the quality of the steel that must be that can be used, understanding the geology and the geohydrology of the environment of the particular environment where an applicant has secured the right to execute the exploration. This is directly to ensure that there is protection of groundwater and indeed maintaining a proper well integrity. Also seeks to ensure that the casing can withstand the various comprehensive tensional and bending forces that are exerted while running in the hole. And so in the next slide, 14, it really is to show an example of a conductor casing. And the next two slides, respectively, is an example of a surface casing and an intermediate casing. All of these casings, the first one is to stabilize unconsolidated sediments
if there are any, and also to isolate shallow aquifers. So if you have a shallow aquifer, which is very important source of water, it is protected by these conductor casings. The surface casing is intended to protect surface freshwater formations. So any freshwater formations are protected, and this has been tested and proven over the years that the surface casing properly applied can indeed protect the surface freshwater formations and provide support for pressure control. The intermediate casing, this one isolates unexpected freshwater found below surface casing. And so you'd recognize, honorable members, that there are already three different kinds of casing whose focus is on protection of the aquifer and near surface as well as surface water. The next two slides demonstrate production casing as well as the horizontal and vertical well designs. If we move along, honorable members, to page 19, Regulation 18 specifically focuses on the cement requirements and the comprehensive test. And as indicated earlier, that the specifications for the cement and is one of the very important considerations in the development of fracturing. And so we have spent quite a lot of time and consulted broadly on the cement requirements to ensure that the choices that we make with the cement that is included as a requirement for casing can appropriately protect our water resources as well as the environment in the areas where hydraulic fracturing takes place. Regulation 21 is called blowout prevention, focuses on the prevention of any possible blowout, and these are used to seal, control, and monitor oil and gas wells to prevent any blowout, which is critical to the safety of the crew. This blowout prevention happens at the production level. Of course, we still have to go through the phase of exploration, the whole range of exploration phase, before we can affirm that there is sufficient economic mineralization of shale gas in our Karoo before we shift into production phase. Regulation 5 and 38 focus on the water resource assessment and monitoring, as well as protection of water resources setbacks. And so, honorable members, you'd notice that a lot of focus is placed on the protection of water resources in the development of shale gas. If we flip over to slide 21, Regulation 29, this one places the requirement on the disclosure of hydraulic fracturing liquids. And because there is specialized fluids that are used in hydraulic fracturing, it is important that those are disclosed to the regulator, and with information, then the risks can be appropriately managed as we develop this shale gas potential going forward. Regulation 6 focuses on any potential induced seismicity and the assessment thereof, and so it places a requirement for a seismic inducement to be assessed, while Regulation 41 deals with the disposal of fluids. Regulation 40 applies to water sources and use, while Regulations 9 and 10 deal with the protection of astronomy activities. And I underscore protection of astronomy activities. the regulations 12, 18 and 20 focus on the monitoring of operations. It is critical that the operations are monitored throughout the development of shale gas, and regulation 30 focuses on the fracture and fracturing fluid containment, whereas regulation 6 focuses on further assessment of related seismicity. And so under slide 24, we highlight, indicate the summary of the potential economic benefits, and in the interest of time, honorable members, I will run through to the next slide. Slide 25, I must emphasize that in this slide, these are indicative maps. They by no means indicate you know, what areas have been provided with the rights, but they indicate the areas that have been applied for. And so A and B are sites that are earmarked for exploration applications. Those applications are yet to be processed, considering all the other issues that still need to be considered. I must further indicate that Area C is earmarked only for desktop study, and so it is an application for a technical cooperation. And so the indicative timelines for the shale gas development, honorable members, as I wish to emphasize, these are indicative. In December this year to January next year, we intend to finalize consultations on regulations with affected communities. This is the one leg of our stakeholders that remains outstanding. It is our intention. What we have not done is to go back to the communities as government and say, since you have raised the concerns that you have raised, and we had placed the moratorium that we had placed, we have not gone back to communities and say, this is what we have done to address your concerns. And so our focus in consulting the communities is to take communities into confidence that we have indeed listened to them, and we have done quite a number of things to address the concerns that that they have addressed. Upon consulting with communities, we'll publish the regulations in the Government Gazette in January. In the period February to June, we will focus on the reprocessing of applications in those areas, A and B. And this includes consultations with other state authorities. And our intention is that by July, August next year, we will be issuing exploration licenses beyond which the shale gas exploration shall duly commence. In conclusion, honorable members, we believe that the draft regulations, a summary of which we have just shared with yourselves, will result in a regulatory framework that ensures a safer exploration and subsequent exploitation of our gas resources. We'll finalize these technical regulations for the development of shale gas to ensure that any attendant risks are sufficiently mitigated. And we are targeting December, January next year for this work. We'll then process the applications, which have been held in abeyance until such time that the technical regulations are at the stage where we are and they are concluded. And I must also indicate, honorable members, that the next phase beyond the draft regulation and the processing of application is the exploration phase. And this will indicate whether there is economic recoverability of shale gas or not. And this period, we will take anything between 3 to 7 years. And so it's important that we get to that phase where we can sufficiently collect information and be in a position to say whether shale gas is indeed economically recoverable in South Africa. And we affirm and reaffirm that we've put in place comprehensive monitoring and evaluation systems to ensure that throughout the process there is monitoring and evaluation of the gas development and that early attended risks are monitored by the regulator and that the benefits can be optimized for South Africans. We thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, DG and DG, for the presentation. We'll now allow honorable members to ask questions. Let me emphasize that the question will be asked by honorable members of Parliament, the Select Committee, and the member from the NA. Thank you very much. Can I note hands? Honorable Singh, Honorable Prince, Honorable Lapostavni, Honorable Nyambi, and the Honorable from the NA. Love more, okay. In that order, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just a question as I come from the province of KwaZulu-Natal, I'm hearing that we are exploring, or there's going to be some kind of shale gas exploration in the Karoo. Is there any parts of KwaZulu-Natal that also are targeted? In regards to the permits, have we received applications from local prospectors or international prospectors only? The countries that have explored and drilled for shale gas, could we have the name of those countries and countries that have refused the exploration of shale gas in those countries? And the last question is, when are we expected to go back to communities so that they could have proper consultation and report backs in regards to the shared gas exploration?
I think the last one is in the input, the one of consultation on those indicative timelines. Honorable Prince.
Sorry, Chairperson, thank you. I would like to know how the department will deal with the water challenges, the planning of managed water demands and wastewater storage during the exploration and thereafter. Thank you.
Let me give this opportunity so that we post this Honorable Masango. I see you raising your hand.
Thanks, Chair. I was happy to be last. My question just wants to reflect on what the DDT was saying in terms of the restarting or reassessment or considering of applications. So am I understanding well to say that there are no permits that have been issued yet at this stage? Thanks, Chair.
I have to look because I've got a few questions to ask. First of all, thank you very much for the presentation. Some of the questions have been done. I would like to know on the casings, the various casings on page 7 and 8, and then want to go to page 12. What would be the lifespan of these various casings? And then on page 12, as part of the regulations, you said there will be an assessment of related seismicity, and that would be done before fracturing starts. But I would like to know, will any seismic activity or movement of land or underground or whatever, has an influence on the casings, and if it does, how will it be monitored throughout, and what is the risk of that on casings when it's been done? That's the first question. Then I would also like to know, Regulation 41 on page 11. The approved waste disposal facility and disposal to underground and re-injection disposal prohibited. First of all, I would like to know, does the department have the indication of the number of wells that they will allow, the number of applications that they will allow, and where this will be? It's one of them. Then the part of that is, what is the amount of water that they foresee that would be used, and in specific areas such as the Karoo, what would be the resources of these of this water? And then I would like to know, I would request the department to come back to this committee and give us a detailed report on what will be the methods in any of these places on the water management. Because as we are sitting, we're coming back from oversight visits, and we've visited the enterprises, and at this moment, the Council of Geoscience gave feedback that, as we all know, it's been in the press, acid mine drainage is a problem in this country. And there is still now, at this moment, research being done to curb that. 20 years ago, nobody thought about that. Now, we think we've got all the answers, and I don't question the professionals on this, but as a political representative, we need to ask these questions on the water disposal business, because, and I would also like the department to give the committee an idea, as you said that you consulted the American or Petroleum Institute on technical regulations. What is the specific regulations of the API on water disposal, and do we follow their recommendations, or are part of these regulations that you've just swiftly mentioned to us? What is the exact details of that? That is on that, and I don't think I've got a. I think that is my questions. Thank you.
Okay, I'll give you the second round if you think of others. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. As I raised earlier on when you started, I thought I must start by remarking that maybe we'll have that opportunity to do justice to this subject, because I don't think we're doing that. We're trying to raise questions out of what is being presented here. And for Parliament to allocate each and every committee, researchers, content advisors, is because whenever you have a department or an entity that is coming to make a presentation, we must be more than prepared to engage, not just to do a compliance to say no, we have dealt with a particular presentation. So I'm of the view that, Chair, it will be in order for us to consider doing justice whenever we're dealing with presentations. I will not repeat questions that have been asked, but the presentation, even though there was no slides that were showing there, out of what you have in front of us, we were able to follow. My first question is about the concepts themselves. Is it right for us to use interchangeably hydraulic fracturing and fracking? Does it mean the same thing? If you can try to clarify us on that one, because sometimes we are saying it's fracking, sometimes you see the hydraulic fracturing, and I tend to be confused whether it's the same thing or what is it all about. Then the second one is about the regulations. You are clear about the duration that you are going to spend dealing with communities, but I miss the part that is dealing with any other relevant stakeholder that will be part of those that will be considered. So if you can try to explain how you are going to feature some other relevant stakeholders besides the communities that are being affected. Then the other one, the last one, Chair, because they've covered some of the questions. The last one is about the time frame that has been given to deal with the regulations. I've seen that you have included January and December. Is it practically given that some people will be on holidays on those days? So if you can try to comment on that, because I think it might end up being a challenge. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Chair, I am concerned, and I need to raise this, about the apparent bias towards fracking from the department. And I'm referring to one particular slide number 9, where the first bullet point is the use of hydraulic fracturing is perceived to have the attendant risks. The attendant risks have been found to be real in America. There's no perception about that. Also, the presenter said that spoke about the construction of the well, and he said the proper construction of the well will eliminate the risks. Now, I quite frankly don't believe that. But in light of that, in light of what I perceive as bias towards fracking from the department, who will do the monitoring? It was said often that there will be monitoring all the way through the process of the exploration of the fracking, which is fracking in itself, and then later of the production phase. Will the monitoring be done by the Department of Mineral Resources? Will it be done by an interdepartmental committee? Who will actually be doing the monitoring? Chairperson, there was an announcement yesterday in the press generally that Bundigas has been told that its application is being assessed. Now, I want to know if that's true or not. I don't understand, if it is true, how it can be so in terms of what, if the regulations have not yet been finalized, in terms of what is it actually being assessed. Chair, my constituency, or the constituency that I serve, includes Graaffreinet. Recently, about 3 weeks ago, there was a very big meeting called by the Eastern Cape government. The Premier was present, and the Premier presented information about fracking to the meeting. One of the things that was presented was the fact that the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University has been contracted to do a baseline study, which will inform on the geology, geohydrology, etc., which will inform activities going forward. I'd be interested from the Department of Mineral Resources to know, if they know, I'm sure that they do, who's funding that study. To the best of my knowledge, it's being funded by the government, by the provincial government, which is rather strange, because ordinarily the polluter pays, and I'm interested in why the polluter is not paying, or the potential polluter is not paying in this case. Chair, many of my questions were covered, which I'm very grateful for. I'm also very concerned about waste disposal and how that will be done, but I think I'll leave it there for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. At this stage, we'll allow the department to respond to the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable Chair and honorable members. The first question which was raised was about KwaZulu-Natal and where do we find shale gas? Will there be targets in KwaZulu-Natal? Basically, shale gas will be targeted by prospective investors in shale horizons which occur within the Karoo. The Karoo covers quite an extensive area in South Africa, but the areas which most people have actually identified as key for shale gas occurrence is mainly Western Cape, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape. There are parts of KwaZulu-Natal which have got Karoo. It will depend on the depth of the shale horizons, because if the shale horizons are shallow, it won't be conducive to do hydraulic fracturing. So it will depend from place to place. But basically, quite a big area of South Africa has got Karoo rocks in there. So I think that there will be people who will be interested in KwaZulu-Natal. There could be people who will be interested in Limpopo, because also have got shale gas there, but it will depend from area to area. The critical areas which people have shown much interest are those three provinces, and to some extent KwaZulu-Natal and parts of the Free State. The other issue is which countries are exploring or exploiting shale gas. USA is advanced. I think it's the leader in terms of exploitation of shale gas. We have got countries like China. China has done exploration. Poland has also tried to do some exploration. So there are quite a number of countries which have embarked on this process. But there are certain countries, especially in the EU, whereby issues were raised around the shale gas, and they have kept it on hold. So it will depend from country to country. In terms of the timelines have been addressed there in the presentation. The issues of water, how will the department deal with water issues? What happens, any exploration, even if it's mining, if it's prospecting for mineral resources, people will have to, people approach government with their plan. There must be environmental management programs or environmental management plans which are put together, and people will indicate how they will undertake that specific exploration or specific prospecting in terms of mineral. So even here, people will have to indicate to us, look, we are going to undertake exploration in this way, we will source water from this area, and then there will be processes in government which will assess, evaluate those plans. I think there was also an issue which was raised about the who will be doing monitoring. There is an interdepartmental committee which will be looking at all those things, which will be monitoring the process. So it will depend from company to company. It will also depend from area to area. Some people even suggest that in the cases where you don't even have water, you could even consider other fluids like propane. Okay? So individual companies will come with their plans. Their plans will be addressed accordingly. We'll look at them, evaluate them, and then decisions will be made based on those plans which will be presented. The other one is the number of exploration rights. The exploration rights, there's no company which has been issued with an exploration right. people have applied. There was a moratorium which is in place. No company has been given an exploration right to undertake hydraulic fracturing. That is effect at this stage. Okay. If there's any right which has been given or which could be considered to be given, it will not be for hydraulic fracturing. It could be for other exploration activities. In the Karoo, exploration activities are taking place. But hydraulic fracturing, there's no company which has been awarded as yet. The issues of seismicity and the casings, certainly that is why there is a section in the regulations. The section in the regulations which would require that seismicity be monitored by the companies as they undertake their exploration and as well as their production activities. So that should be to be a requirement. Council for Geoscience, which is the organization which is responsible in terms of monitoring seismicity in the country on a 24-hour basis, they will be engaged, they will be involved, they will be working with the companies to ensure that that the areas are monitored for seismicity. To protect the integrity of the well, the DCG mentioned the issues around the integrity of the well. It's extremely important. We have to have continuous monitoring of those cases, continuous monitoring of the well to ensure that water resources are protected. If you look at how the casings are, especially if you look at slide 5. If you see the pink area there, that pink area is basically showing the cement. What happens, you will drill the hole, okay, and then you insert the casing. After inserting the casing, you pump the cement, which will then be, the cement will be between your rocks and the casing. And that technology has been used for many, many years, and it has reached a stage whereby the risks are quite low in terms of polluting the water resources. That is extremely important. And I think everything revolves around ensuring that we monitor the environment. The number of wells. How many wells will be drilled? It will also depend. I mean, exploration, it depends from area to area. If people look at a field and say, we need 10 wells, the monitoring committee will also look at that and say, look, what are these 10 wells going to, what will they do to the environment? What impact will that have on the environment? You can't at this stage say, I'm going to allow for 5 wells, I'm going to allow for 6 wells. It will depend on the resource which is being explored. And if people come to the department and say, I'm going to drill 10 wells, we'll sit with them and say, where are those wells going to be drilled? And where are the water resources? How can we ensure that those water resources are protected and are not affected by the well? But there are also other things which are going to take into consideration. We talked about the issues of the SKA. It has to be protected. Okay? So you might decide that, look, in this area, we're not going to allow wells to be drilled. So it will depend from case to case. It will not be an issue which you cannot say, look, we're going to allow 50 wells here or 100 wells here. It will be, each case will be dealt with on its own merit. The issue of acid mine drainage, certainly it is a challenge, its issues of acid mine drainage. But if you look at what is happening in Gauteng with regards to acid mine drainage, it's a historic issue, it's a historic liability which this country has inherited for over 100 years of mining. That is the big challenge we are facing here. Okay? And we can't compare the two things. You know, here we are dealing with a new area, a virgin area, and what we are saying here is that, look, let's approach this matter in a very responsible manner. That is why the regulations have been developed to address this. If 100 years ago, people would just go and mine. There were no EMP. People just mined and left the area as it is. That is why we are faced with what we are facing in terms of acid mine drainage, which the Council for Geoscience is involved in the Gauteng area. Here we are saying that we are going to mitigate these issues and try to protect the environment. And I think a lot of countries are involved in this in this activity. We can learn from them, and I'm sure that with the monitoring team, these issues of environment can be addressed and protected. Water disposal issues. Water and waste disposal.
Thanks, DG. Honorable members, the Regulation 41 deals specifically with water disposal. That, you know, what these regulations do effectively is that when an applicant prepares and submits their application, they already must, as part of their submission, indicate the water disposal mechanisms that are in place. So that we, together with, in particular, the Department of Water and Sanitation, can then evaluate whether the water disposal mechanisms and proposals that are part of the submission necessarily warrant that that submission be processed, because it provides sufficiently for the safe disposal of water in the event that such disposal is a requirement. I just wanted to emphasize to honorable members that the one environmental system of licensing involves not only the DMR, but the DMR together with the Department of Water and Sanitation, as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs. And so many of the issues that may seem to be slightly beyond the scope of the DMR, such as the details of water management and the reasons they're incorporated under Regulations 5 and 38, particularly in respect of water management. It is the part that will be dealt in detail and given the competence that is resident in the Department of Water Affairs by, and we will be assisted by our counterparts in the Department of Water Affairs. Thank you.
The other issue was the use of the waste hydraulic fracturing and hydraulic fracking, as people use them interchangeably, and some people say hydraulic fracturing, some people say hydraulic fracking, it's the same thing. We prefer to use the word hydraulic fracturing. In terms of relevant stakeholders, We you know, the process, if you look at how it evolved over time, we started by publishing or releasing a document which assessed issues around environment, socio-economic issues that were assessed in that document. It's a public document. Following that, we then developed regulations. These regulations are draft regulations which were published. They are published now. And what we have done is we have received comments from various stakeholders. We have now incorporated those comments into the regulations. Now, what we are having now is the product which are going to go out now and consult stakeholders. It will be open, and we will be ready to accept comments from all stakeholders as we engage on these things, in to ensure that we finalize, we'll be producing the final regulations once we engage. So we are not going to be selective, it's just only communities. Any stakeholder who is interested is most welcome to submit. In fact, people have already done so. They have already submitted their comments to the department, and we have actually factored these comments. We'll be going out to interact with communities to to ensure that we can enhance the product before it's released.
And you also, as you are commenting on the issue of consultation, also address the time period in terms of the indicative timeline, December, January.
Okay. Okay. Our aim is that we want to finalize the consultation by end of January. You know, we have to find if we can start maybe the first week or so, December or so. If we don't finish by maybe the last 2 weeks of January, we could do that. But that is our target. We know that December, January is a difficult period in terms of holidays, but we would like to finalize our consultation by end of January. That is our target at this stage. The issue of apparent bias by the department towards hydraulic fracturing, I don't think we are really biased towards hydraulic fracturing. All what we are saying, we're saying that let's allow, you know, this investigation to take place. Let's allow exploration to take place and see if there are these resources which people have indicated that we have in South Africa. And then we can make a decision there if those resources are there, how they will be exploited. And that is our approach as the Department of Mineral Resources. Even our, when it comes to mineral resources, that's the approach we promote. The development of the resources of South Africa, but in a very responsible manner. I think that I would like to underscore that. We're saying, if people are saying, look, there are these potential resources, let's look at them, let's see what we have there, how they can contribute to the economy of the country. We can't just ignore that. If you look at what has happened to the USA in terms of the recent economic recovery, people are attributing that to the discovery of shale gas and the exploitation of shale gas in the USA. That actually resulted in a situation whereby gas prices and energy prices have actually gone down in the US. So what we are saying as the government department, are saying, let's allow people to explore, let's see what we have, but that should be done in a very responsible way. The monitoring committee, we have touched on that. It is, we have an interdepartmental committee. In fact, the regulation was developed by the committee. The committee went through the process of assessing those regulations. We've got departments such as Department of Water and Sanitation, Department of Environment, Department of Science and Technology, Department of Energy there. This team will continue to monitor the situation. So it won't only be the Department of Mineral Resources which is going to monitor them. We've got expertise from other departments which we have got to utilize to ensure that we can address this matter of shale gas development in a very responsible way. Department of Water Affairs, they are really concerned about water issues. They look at them, they come with advice and say, no, this is how we need to do it. You know, that is why they are there. Department of Environment, they are concerned about issues of environment. They come in and say, this is the approach, this is the scientific approach we should do. So it is a very valuable committee which is in place. I've touched on the issue of application, but we have not issued out any application. We have not issued out any license in terms of exploration. Nelson Mandela, the study which is being undertaken there, I think it will be difficult for us to answer that one in terms of where they get the funding and I think perhaps maybe that the university should be approached and ask that question. It will be difficult for us to answer that one.
I think the principle is now that you are involved as a department at a national level together with the other departments, is it really necessary then for the provincial government to also get involved I think that is a principal question.
I think just as, I mean, in government we collaborate on this issue. We will engage the, in terms of our consultation. In fact, when we consult in terms of these regulations, we engage local communities, we engage in, local municipalities, we engage also the provinces. So we collaborate, even in terms of monitoring of the situation, we will collaborate. But when universities undertake research, I think they need to be given support in whatever way, because we can only benefit as a country if universities come on board and undertake research in this area. We can only benefit from such a situation, because it's a new area in South Africa. The more universities get involved there and do research and advise us, we can only benefit in this regard.
Okay. But the other, I think the question basically was, she said, why shouldn't the potential polluter be the one that is paying? But also in the collaboration between the national and the province. For me, I take it for granted that then you should be familiar with what is happening, because there should be reports that you receive on what the provinces are doing with regard to the project.
Okay. On the issue, Honorable Chair, on the issue of polluter pay, certainly we use the principle of polluter pay in terms of development of resources in South Africa, be they petroleum resources or mineral resources. They have to pay for them. And my understanding of the program with Nelson Mandela is not about paying for what the polluters have done. It's about research and understanding the environment. But in terms of issues of once they get the license, they will have to pay for what to ensure that they mitigate against negative environmental situations. So there is the principle of polluter pays, which is there. Nelson Mandela is just a research. They are not doing any hydraulic fracturing. If they have got to undertake hydraulic fracturing, they will have to approach the department. That will be considered as a research program, and there are ways in which you address that. Also, similarly, if a university goes out and undertakes hydraulic fracturing, they will have to find ways of ensuring that they protect the environment. But let's separate between a research project and a project which is aimed at a commercial project, like the ones which we are talking about, where people have applied for rights to do exploration for shale gas. I think that covers that area. But in terms of what's happening there, we are aware of this project. We as I said, we will support research from whoever does it, especially our universities as well as our science council. We consider it as a research project.
Thank you very much, DG, for the responses. I want to check with the honourable members if they have a follow-up question to the responses. Not new questions, just a follow-up to the question that you raised, as well as the responses. Honourable Lovemore and the Honourable Lapus Kahu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to go back to a question that I asked that wasn't answered. I think it might have been misunderstood. I asked about Boundu Gas and the reports that the application is being processed. Not that a license has been issued, the reports are that the application, Boundu Gas has been told that their application is being processed. Is that true? If so, in terms of what? Because the technical regulations have not yet been finalized. Chair, I would like very much to understand the consultation further. It sounds like, well, it sounded like in the presentation, it sounded like an information sharing meeting where the department, in fact, the presenter said the department would go and tell the stakeholders what it had done, you know, in the meantime, since the last time they had spoken, which is fair enough. When the DG, however, spoke, he said we will listen to all comments and we will use them in order, something like, I can't remember the exact words, but something like to enhance our final product. The two are very different. What is the consultation? Is it listening to comments, hearing comments, and incorporating them before the final regulations are put together? Or is it informing stakeholders of the final regulations? With respect to the consultation, is there a timetable for those of us who would like to be part of this? Is there a timetable? I'm presuming that I hope to get confirmation of this. I'm presuming that every person or every interested and affected party that submitted comment will be informed of the consultation. But otherwise, how will people get to know and how will they be able to attend? Thank you, Chair.
Maybe this is a question that posted a little bit too early, but I would like to know what role does the department play, does the department know that the specific identified sites that's going for exploration in fracking, are they properly zoned with the local municipalities? Because land use is a function of municipalities. And if they are not zoned, how do you foresee the process for that?
DG.
Thank you. With regards to the application of Bundi, what I would like to reiterate here is that the department will not issue out licenses for hydraulic fracturing. If there is any processing, it is not for hydraulic fracturing, it will be just for any other exploration. That is the fact. We are not going to issue out hydraulic fracturing licenses for this at this stage because there is a moratorium on that matter. In terms of the consultation, there is a process. Certainly, when we consult people, we don't just consult them, you know, just to listen to them. We consult them so that we could hear their views and then incorporate their views in the regulation. It's a process which we follow for any regulation which you release, for any legislation. You consult people to listen to them and then so that you incorporate their views and then so that you can have a strengthened product. And that is the process which we are going to follow. We are not just going to listen to people there. And the other one is the specific areas for exploration in terms of the municipalities. We will consult with everybody, and there are processes which are followed in terms of evaluating and assessing applications. Where municipalities have got to play a role, they will be allowed to play their role in terms of the legislation. Everything will follow the legislation as captured in the NPRDA and other related legislation. So we will ensure that all relevant authorities are involved in this process as per the legislation. There are prescribed ways of of us undertaking such a process. DDG will touch on the other.
Thanks, DG. I think on the on the question of specific sites and the zoning, there is the loophole that the land use provincial ordinances would likely be guided as well by loophole as part of the broad consultation that my Director General alluded to. But principally, we shall be guided by loophole.
Thank you very much. At this stage, what we're going to do is that we will ask the department, in fact, we'll ask members to make further questions in writing to the department via the secretary of the select committee, but also we'll ask the department to respond in writing to the question that they've already responded to, as well as the new questions that the members will be writing to them. But we would like also to get the document that you refer to that will cooperate the comments that will be made by the stakeholders. But I want to also, in this meeting, to remind the department that we will be meeting with yourselves as well on the 25th of November. If you can note that, but it will be mainly on the issue of coal. But we would like also developments on the issue of shale gas on the 25th, if you can update us on those issues. So mainly the meeting was originally for the permits on the issue of coal, but we want to just update on this particular issue. And also want to emphasize, therefore, that we should get documents on time for the meeting of the 25th. At this stage, then, I would like to thank members for attending, and also thank the department, DG, and your team. The meeting is adjourned. We will then ask the honorable members to remain so that we can consider the minutes of the last meeting. Thank you very much. We only ask the members to remain and everybody else.